Brian Jones. I'm with Health First Health Plans. I'm the manager of customer experience. I joined that organization midway through last year, so it's been just over a year, and it's my first entry into health insurance. Prior to this, I was in telecommunications for about 17 years, in large part leading customer service, customer experience, and sales. So with Net Promoter Score, I was in those roles leading what's called a closed-loop team and focusing very heavily on Net Promoter Score for the last 6 years before I left. Interestingly, coming from one of the few industries that actually performs worse in that metric than our own right now, health insurance. So a lot of learnings come from that. So happy to share those as I go along. This is really similar to the presentation I gave a couple of months ago. So if anyone joined that one, this will be a little bit of a repeat. And at the end, I'll get into some more detail around some tricks of the trade and how to apply such a program in a way that'll be useful and then valuable as you go back and talk to your board, whether on the tactics you're going to take and the strategies you're going to implement. So let me get the clicker. Click past all that. So a lot of people have talked about Net Promoter Score so far today, so there's probably a good portion of the room that really knows what Net Promoter Score is about. It's really a measurement of engagement, though. Loyalty is a big piece of that, but it's truly, truly engagement, how engaged your customers are with your brand, and your products. It's used by really every organization I can think of that's sizable, that's part of the marketplace today, regardless of the industry and regardless of which country you're in. Net Promoter Score is there to be seen. The standard loyalty question, it's already been quoted a couple times today. So it is, how likely is it that you would recommend the brand, the product, the service, whatever that is, to a friend or colleague? Very specifically, that's exactly what it's always going to be. It needs to be on a 0 to 10-point scale as best you can. And then it breaks down your responses into three key categories: your promoters, your detractors, and your passives. The promoters are the people that feel so good about your brand. They've had such good experience that they're out there doing exactly what they're titled to do, promoting. They're building your business for you. The speeches earlier around customers and how they drive your business forward, that's what a promoter does. That's why they're valuable, because they're going to bring more customers to your business. You don't have to advertise for them. Your passives, I always think someone who gives me a 7 or even an 8 on a survey is pretty good. 8 sounds okay to me. The problem is they don't go out and advertise for you. They feel good about your brand. They're probably not going to leave, but they're also not going to bring new revenue to your organization. And they're a little bit easier to lose on price point. So they have a higher propensity to leave when a price war ensues. Then you have your detractors, 6s all the way down to 0s. They are actively going out and taking customers away from you in the future, so not necessarily churn, but they're guarding you against getting new customers. And they're going to leave eventually. As soon as they find another option, they're going to leave. That's what detractors kind of do. So those are your three categories for our Net Promoter subcategories, at least. The Net Promoter calculation, simply the percentage, the distribution of your 9s and 10s. Then you subtract your 6s and belows, and that's your Net Promoter. So again, it's from negative 100 all the way up to positive 100. A 0 or anything positive is good. Right, especially in our industry, where the industry average right now is 12. That is the industry. So benchmarking, this mentions 2016. I've just recently received the 2017 data, and I'll show you that as well. So Satmetrics is the organization that provides the Net Promoter Score. You can get it from other places. It's called the same thing. Satmetrics is the creator, the primary source of that. So they do their surveys once a year. It's done in mass, and it is done in January and February every season. They present their data, their findings, usually midsummer or late summer. So those results have come out very recently. In the past, they've actually shared the verbatim responses because they do theirs via email and writing. So customers are allowed to respond back, which is really powerful. They used to, up until last year, actually share those with you. If you had access to their data, you could see all the verbatim responses about all the organizations. They've since stopped that. Naturally, I think they figured out from some of their responses, from some of their some of the customers that they really didn't like, that all the other organizations in that same industry could read what the customers thought about them. So I'd love to see that again. It was helpful. But they do a really big survey. It's not just health insurance, of course, right? It's every industry, and they cover 23 different industries right now. The last survey they did was 70,000 brand ratings, so across 30,000 consumers. It's sizable. You get a really good sample. In our industry, the top 10 are getting about a sample of 300 responses for each, which is significant in that you get a decent response rate. Doesn't sound like enough, and I'll share with you what we're experiencing at Health First as far as our responses and the sample size we're using. So benchmark data, this is 2017 and in the light blue 16. Our industry, and I think last time we met about this, I mentioned there's a cyclical trend to our industry. We go 12, 18, 12, 19, 12. So 12's always there, underlying, and we're kind of bouncing up and down. I don't know why still, Dennis. You asked the question last time. I still don't know exactly why that occurs. And Satmetrics hasn't been able to expose that to me either. But as interesting as that is, you can also see the this year we're down to a 12. Kaiser Permanente was the market leader, has been the market leader as far as this survey goes for the last several years, but they've fallen to a 28, and Humana has actually improved as far relatively against the total population. So it's tightened up this past season. So kind of interesting to see that happen. As of the previous year, you can see Kaiser Permanente was a 43 and Humana was a 39. So interesting to see them all kind of regress. At the same time, what we heard earlier was everyone else who's already presented their results says you improved year over year in 2017. So that's an oddity in and of itself, right? It also depends on how you're doing your survey. Their survey is a once-a-year relationship survey, which is the true MPS. Then there's the transactional surveys that a lot of us are doing, Health First included, because it's easy to get to, and I like to see data every day, every week, every month. It's really attractive to grab. It is not necessarily the relationship survey. It can get a little twisted when it comes to using that MPS number as your true MPS, only because it's influenced by the transaction they just had, right? So the experience I just had is going to degrade or improve or inflate my experience. But if I'm generally a promoter, then I'm not going to get degraded that much. So even if I had a bad experience, I'm really forgiving. That's my nature because I really like your brand, especially if you come back and fix it, right? So I might normally give you a 10, but today you gave me a real bad experience, so I'm going to give you an 8 because it just wasn't the best. But anyone else might have given you a 4. So promoters in themselves are really positive on your numbers. The more you have, the better you are. That's the way it goes. But it also makes it a lot more forgiving when you do have a downtrend. It'll soften the dip. So all of my data that I'm presenting here is from the Satmetrics site. They have... you can go in and log in. You have to pay for access if you haven't done that already. They're not the only source, of course. There's other sources where you can go grab Net Promoter data and survey information. This is the one that I've always used. I'll continue to use them myself and for Health First because it seems to be the most reliable, and they have a lot of historical data that goes along with it and a lot of resources you can use to run your own campaign for your organization. So they have a lot of support to offer. So Health First health plans, specifically, we have our two different ways that we're running our surveys. We do the transactional, of course, using post-call survey. Sounds like some other organizations are doing the same thing. In our post-call survey, we have three questions. We don't get to ask the why question, because in post-call survey, how do you record it? That's the trouble, unless you do it in like a voicemail system where they leave you a message and then you have to read it back and figure all that out. So we avoid that for the moment in transactional. We ask the recommend question, so the 0 to 10. Then we ask, specific to the transaction you just had, trying to separate the customer from the experience and the transaction. So the second question is, on a 0 to 10, rate your transaction, your experience, your customer experience on this interaction, using the same scale. And then we also ask them how many times they've called about the same situation If it's not resolved, they have an option to press off and actually go to one of our team leads to help them resolve the situation now. So that's an important thing that we also look at to see, hopefully, everyone's saying, this is my first time I've called. And about 82% of our interactions are responding in one call so far. So that's really positive. The other thing we began doing at the end of last year was a relationship survey. So it's an annual survey. We did that in December of last year. We were trying to get a baseline set so we could set our own goal for NPS going forward. There's a couple of things that we had to do as part of that relationship survey. If you're already doing it or considering doing it, not doing it with your own employees is important. The call should not come, if you're going to do it a call or an email, should not come from you. It may tip the scales unnecessarily. You don't want your survey to seem biased first. So if it needs to be unbiased. Also, your survey results need to mirror your population of customers. So if half of your customer base is Medicare, but when you do your survey, 75% of your respondents are Medicare, that's not going to work for you because, as you've seen in other organizations as they report the results, your net promoter score changes by line of business, by time of year, by type of interaction they're having. All those things influence that net promoter score. So you need to do the best job you can in trying to mirror your total population, make it a valid sample as you go across that. I recommend very much on the relationship survey doing that in writing, via email, letter, mailing it to them if they don't want to receive it via email. And we've also done ours through a live phone interaction, actually getting contractors to come in and make the calls and record the verbatim. And we only ask the two questions, the recommend question and why. And if there's an outstanding issue, we mark that as something else someone needs to follow up on. So it was a really good exercise that we went through. So I'm going to share the results that we have from both of these. So it's really hard to read, I know, because it's small. We have October through September. And fiscal year to date. So this is transactional. We began last year at around the 63, 62, bouncing around. In January was our low point at 60. Really high results. We questioned it every month. Are these accurate? Are we getting the right kind of response? And to be real clear, these are members only, customers only, not providers. Excluding providers from this data set. So we track it every call. We offer that just like any other plans are. It's before the interaction begins in the IVR. Would you like to stay in the line and participate in a survey? A brief three-question survey. We're very clear about that. The members opt in. We get between 650 and about 1,000 respondents per month in Medicare and individual and commercial. So it's a decent sample for us. And we trend this line across the year. We improved as we got past January. Open enrollment, annual enrollment, as soon as everything hit, obviously a little bit of a downturn, some people dissatisfied with the onboarding process most likely. That cleans up really quickly, though, as we do welcome calls and get back into normal operation. So we hit peaks of 67 and actually 68 so far in September. So we had 2 months at 67. In March and August, and our year-to-date average is 63. And as September has progressed on, we've actually crossed to 64. Really, really, really high results. I have some theories on why that is. I'll share them in a minute. So the relationship survey, slightly different. And I show two numbers here. I like the average number because you're answering 0 to 10. Why not average that? I feel good knowing that we're on average an 8.79. Sounds high. That's almost a promoter on every response, right? And then by line of business, so we separated out. We have two brands that we sell under, Health First and Florida Hospital. And then we've split it up by individual, commercial, and Medicare. So our individual, like someone mentioned earlier, is our lowest. We're an average of an 8 with a 33 NPS. Attribute a lot of that to the reason they join and the way that they join the organization, the way that they select us. Individual are forced, right? Choose or be fined. So the inherent enjoyment of selecting a health insurance plan isn't there. This is a fact of life. I'm having to do it. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. So naturally, it's a little bit lower. On the commercial side, we got a 50. So those customers are generally happy to have our insurance. It's provided by their company. These are companies that are located inside of our home county of Brevard County in Eastern Florida. I'm from Eastern North Carolina. I apologize. So Eastern Florida. So these customers are really familiar with our brand. We're an IDN in the area, a really large part of the community. So I expect our commercial members to be very pleased with our brand and happy to be part of the family. So a 50 makes good sense. On the Medicare portions, on the Health First brand, we were a 75, really, really strong. Happy to see that result. And then on the Florida Hospital side, a 67, also very, very strong. The positive piece of all this is our total is a 58, and this is in December when we were running a 62, 63 on transactional, which meant to me that we're at least heading in the right directionally. These numbers are valid. So it helped me after December and seeing these results not really question our 62s and 63s and 64s as much. I think it's more of a result of where Health First sits and how our customer base is positioned with our brand in our especially our home county of Brevard. So it speaks to the localness, the community feel that our brand has in our market, and that a lot of you and your organizations can have in your markets because of your size and scope, unlike the Blues of the world. So they don't get the same benefits that we get. To the same point I made about individual Medicare Advantage, they have other options. They choose to come to your brand. It's a much more positive selection process. It's not a situation of choose this or be fined. It's you have some other options. You can go back to regular Medicare or come to Health First, a brand you like, a brand you know, a brand in your community, and you know it's a very positive thing for them. So they're much more happy in the selection process than I think our individual members are. So I'll close with activities and then talk about some other things that go along with that. So some of the things that we're doing now, closed loop process. It is part of a Net Promoter Score campaign. It's reaching out to members that respond. Right now we're only reaching out to dissatisfied members. So those are zeros through twos. So if you give us a one or a zero, we're calling to find out why. Because on the transactional survey, we don't know. Right, it's that post-call survey. So we want to know why. It's a tough call to make. We have an outbound team that does several other things, but this is one of their campaigns. We have one of our most tenured, most knowledgeable, most empathetic associates to make that call, and also universally trained. Has to know all lines of business because he doesn't really know what he's going to step into. So we've gotten good results from that. Actually, customers are really pleased that we're reaching out to find out why, and then helping them solve their issues. About half the time we reach somebody, they didn't mean to give us that score, is what we're finding. They meant to give us a 10, and they put a 1 or a 0. So is that, right, that's exactly where I was going to go. Did they mean that, or is it that I'm calling you now and saying, why'd you do that? So you have to be also careful with how you word that call. It's not, hey, you took a survey yesterday, you gave us a 0, we want to know why. It's, you had an interaction with us yesterday, I see from a survey response that it didn't go as well as you would have liked. Can you help me understand what I can do to improve your experience? What is there something outstanding that needs to be resolved? You have an issue we can help you with. That's a little bit better, right? We don't want to punish people for responding to the survey. And if you do it that way, the first way, that's exactly how they'll feel. And they'll pull back and say, I didn't give you a 0. So it is something to be conscious of. The other thing we've begun doing is attributing our transactional surveys to our associates, so the associate that took the call. So those are linked through our IVR. So when we get our results, we know the agent that took the call, and then we can link that question 1 and question 2 about the experience back to that associate. We've not really begun sharing that data with them just yet because I want to get a good baseline going. We changed the question 2 initially, had a different scale on it. We had a 0 to 5 scale. But the IVR let them answer 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever they wanted to. So our data was kind of skewed. So on a scale of 5, you might have an average of a 7.5. That doesn't work. So we changed the scale a couple months ago. We're building that up, and it will become part of the CSR coaching process. It's going to be a number that we use, share with them on a frequent basis, to include NPS. We need to do a better job in our organization of letting our frontline know how our customers feel about us, and that NPS number is a really good measure of that. They don't see it regularly today, but they will in the very near future. In the future, we're going to also improve our closed loop process. We'll expand that to be a full closed loop, which means we're reaching out to customers that scores highly. Promoters, we want to find out why, right? Just as much as I want to know why you gave us a zero, why'd you give us a 10? We need to know what we're doing well. How do we continue that? And those customers will also tell us things that we can improve on when you have that conversation. And once we get to the point where we can, inside the survey, know what drove the issue or drove the response, being able to categorize those as unresolved incidents, so when a customer calls in and they didn't get their issue resolved, being able to follow back up with them and fix that as well, being a little bit more proactive inside of that. The second to last bullet, we're going to start including our providers in our surveys. We've done that very recently. The first month we did it, our NPS was very low. It was still positive, though. I think it was around 20. For us, comparatively low, right? And then the second month, we jumped by about 19 points with them as we changed. We're not even sure really what drove that change just yet. I'd like to say we improved a customer experience and for the providers and did a lot of fancy things on the lines. We did not. So we're watching that number to see how volatile it is with providers. We don't get the same response rate with providers, as you would imagine. They don't want to stay on the line and answer a survey about how much they liked or disliked speaking to you today. So we have to figure out how do we get more response in that, and how do we measure that in a consistent way without overreacting to a spike or a downturn that's probably just 1 month. So we are working on that. And then standardizing the frequency of the relationship survey. Like I said, last year is when we began at Health First. It has to be an annual thing. You need to do it every, and once you start, stick to the season you're in, because there is seasonality to the measure. As we know with AEP and OEP, that's going to impact you significantly, as is the enrollment time once they become effectuated. That's also going to change their experience for a period of time. So pick your time of the year, do your relationship survey at the same time every year. That will make sure your results are at least useful. So I'd hate to have to throw one away because it was 6 months off. It will impact you.
Does time of week matter? Which day?
I haven't seen that it does yet. From a transactional standpoint, I would say I can't see our data in a way that's telling me that day of week is impactful at the moment. I think wait time is impactful. So if you have a significantly longer average speed to answer, on say a Monday, which a lot of people, if you get a spike of calls on Monday and the rest of your week is a little bit more leveled out, then yeah, I think it would, because that has a significant impact on customer experience. Even though you may override that on the call, it can still have a big impact. Yeah, it's a good question. I haven't looked at our data at the day level just yet. Some other things I wanted to add to this. So that's basically the presentation I provided a couple months ago. So a couple of things to know about just setting up a program for those that have already done it or in the infancy, much like Health First is in the infancy, or are considering launching it. So when you set up a new program, make sure you're segmenting your surveys by line of business. So if you have multiple lines of business, make sure you can tell the difference when you receive a survey response back that it's Medicare or individual or commercial or Medicaid. It will be important to you as you're seeing with other organizations that are speaking about it. And ideally, if you can get to the point where you can segment by interaction type. So Health First doesn't do that today. All the transactions come across as part of the IVR. But if you start doing email or online surveys that are kicked off by other transactions, such as a telephone call, a payment being made, an enrollment happening, or a claim being processed, meaning they've seen a doctor. If you're an IDN, that makes a lot of sense. And there's other things based on your organizations that'll make sense to you too. But if you can segment your surveys and then have them fire out based on those interactions, you'll then be able to start identifying by line of business, by the type of transaction where your trouble spots really are. And that will help you know where to focus when you go to do process improvement. When you go back to your board and say, here's the activities I want to carry out, and here's, and I'll talk a little bit more about ROI in a moment, it will help make the case for you. There's conversation here about how do I know where to go focus. Net Promoter Score is great for knowing that there is a place to focus, but until you get it narrowed down to the point where you really can tell where to shine your flashlight, it does make it a little convoluted because you're set reading thousands of verbatim responses from customers and trying to pick out what's the three things I want to go do. That's tough. That's very tough. So the other thing I would say is, as we've done with our transactional survey, which is nice because you're getting a high frequency in response, doing it via email or written letter or even a live survey on a phone call gives you that verbatim response. It's really necessary, especially in the relationship survey. Really, really, especially in that relationship survey, so you know you can start using that data to get down to the whys. It's nice to do it on the transactional survey too, so if you can get to the point where your customers, you have enough email capture in your customer population where you can send emails and get a good response rate, then I highly recommend it. If you don't, then of course using the IVR as a, you know, in a post-call survey is still functional. So, and then the other thing to think about as you launch these programs is, are you going to flood your customers with contacts? So they're calling you. They're probably getting calls from you and the medical group about, you know, appointment reminders and all kinds of other things. We're mailing them stuff constantly. I don't know if everyone else, every other organization is like Health First, but our customers tell us how much mail they get from us. It's inundating. And then add on top of that, if you start doing an email survey after every interaction, if you do it after every one, it can be a lot. So you would hear from your customers if you start doing that 100% of the interactions, you would actually hear a little bit of a backlash. Be mindful of that. Going through customer journey mapping will help everyone understand those touch points and how many times they're being touched at different times. A lot of systems that allow you to manage those campaigns will also allow you to select the percentage of time a survey will get sent based on an interaction. So Satmetrics, for example, if you provide them your data for all phone payments, you could say send 20% and they'll randomly select 20%, right? So at least that way you're dialing it back a little. You'll find the number that's right for your organization, of course. So as far as program setup, those are probably my biggest pieces of advice, just thinking about your customers and not inundating them and making sure you can divide that data up well. So if you don't do it up front, it's really hard to handle it on the backside. And once you get to actually handling the data, handling the responses, being able to include the data elements you need on that survey, so being able to link it to member ID, being able to link it to an interaction, a specific interaction, especially if it's something like a payment being made or enrollment being made, so you know what kind it is, will help you analyze data better. Also, it's going to help you when you bring your surveys in to start looking at them and segmenting them by promoters, detractors, and passives and separate them out and then do analysis based on the type of cost of service they might have. So if you can link your member ID to a call and start measuring the AHT on average for all these promoters' responses you received, and you can do the same at your passive and your detractor level, you'll see that there is a different cost of service that goes into that. So when it comes to AHT, the number of calls they make, the number of escalations they create, referrals they create. So if you have a referral process, actually being able to track, that's a big part of a promoter, is how many referrals they bring into your organization. So being able to track the number of referrals they bring to you and the business they drive, but without a referral program, you can't do that. Retention, how many times that customer is likely to re-enroll, to stay, so you don't have the cost of acquisition again. All those things can be broken out by the passive, detractor, and promoter levels, and then that's how you get back to ROI when you start pitching ideas about where I'm going to go focus and my board has to approve this $25,000 expense. Well, if I can show you that my cost of service will decrease by 10% on this, moving someone from passive to promoter, and I'm going to move 20,000 people that way, and here's the thing I got to go do to make it happen, it's a lot easier to sell. You have a live number that you can leverage. So that's really the only way to use NPS and its economics to actually position your improvements in a way that's going to help your board make the right decision with you. So that's, as far as analysis goes, that's really my best advice for you on how to segment out your responses. If there's any questions I have, that's really it. So any questions you have around how to implement a program, how we've implemented our program, or any struggles you're having, happy to answer. Yes, sir.
As far as hitting the member up as few times as possible, you mentioned sort of sending multiple emails. If you're running a sort of customer service email inbox, why not just put the dialogue at the in sort of in the postscript that, you know, click this link to respond to a customer survey, or at the same time, you know, if it's within your IVR, and I think this comes pretty standard with most IVR packages, but what I'm not sure is standard is, can you give the member an option at that point so that you're not emailing them, that they can, you know, press pound to leave a message, and then that message forwards to an inbox that can then be kind of drilled down a little bit further on?
Yeah, so two questions there. I think from an IVR perspective, yes, you could give them a voicemail option. Depends on your IVR and the functionality and whether or not you have the skill set in your department that'll be able to produce that for you. The problem you're left with is, what are you going to do with that message? You have to transcribe it before you can actually make it actionable. As far as data goes, from analysis standpoint, yeah, someone can listen to it, know I need to call them back and call them and handle that. But when it comes to review and tracking that over a long period of time, that's where the challenge for me comes in, just from a data and analytic perspective. Your first question as far as how you can run that in an email box. So when Satmetrics does it, they're sending a link. It's an email with a link in it. You click the link, you go to the page, you fill out the survey, and it carries all the metadata with it to tell it the customer's member ID, their name, the transaction ID that brought across with it. It's all the data you're really providing to Satmetrics or any other organization that can do that kind of work. There's several. So I'll mention Satmetrics a lot. I already have. I'm not selling for them. But there's lots of brands if you search.
So it's all one email. I mean, that would be the advantage, is it's all one communication if it's within the same
response. Yeah, so the way that if you use the Satmetrics interface, then it's all within one space. So you assign closed-loop agents that go into the space. They correspond with the customer via that same email interaction. So it's a back and forth that can occur. More often than not, you're probably going to assign, especially if it's an unresolved incident or someone who's really upset, so a 0, a 1, or a 2, you're probably going to call them instead of emailing with them. But after that survey, so the survey comes via email, we get the response via email at that point, and then you probably call. It's your own business rules that define that, though. It's how you want to interact and what the resources you have to apply to that are going to be.
Mine's kind of a follow-on question. It really relates to methodology. You obviously use email a lot. Mm. So my question's kind of two-part. How successful are you at collecting email addresses? Because that's a struggle that we certainly have.
Sure.
And then I'm curious if you've explored using texting to prompt getting information back. Because that's something we're exploring right now.
Right. Good questions. So from an email perspective, in our organization, on the individual commercial side, we're really good at getting email addresses. Actually, somewhere around 70% have a valid email address on file. Medicare is a different option, a different situation. We're lower than 2% right now. We started a trial a couple months ago on email capture with our Medicare customers, basically just asking them if they would like to provide their email address. We give a rundown of exactly what we might be using it for. We have a disclaimer that goes along with it. It's not for marketing purposes. It's really for our own communication. So if we wanted to survey about an interaction, we mention that. In the last 2 months, we've increased our Medicare capture rate on emails between 5 and 10% each month. So it's been positive, and it's only been a trial. So it's been a very small subset of our customer, our associates that have done that. We're getting ready to launch that as a department-wide in customer service so that we can see that grow faster. It would be hard right now to survey our Medicare members as a result of that. We can't survey them via email because we only have 2% of them with an email address, so I'm not going to get a good sample. It's just not going to work. So we have to maintain our transactional survey for now, the IVR, and then our relationship survey will continue to be a phone call, especially with Medicare, until we can get that gap closed.
Have you explored texting then for your commercial?
Thank you for the reminder. So it's something I explored in the telecommunications industry, and we've discussed it at Health First. In what I've always been met with, I've never successfully implemented a text survey. There are some different levels of requirements, as I understand it, through the FCC when it comes to text. I need to get your buy-in beyond a lot of cases what it is via email. So especially with our Medicare membership, they're a little bit more reluctant to receive a text message so far than they are to give us their email address. Surprisingly, at 2% for email, text sounds like it's a little bit more reluctant. So no, probably my simple answer, but I just said a lot of words.
Yeah, we're Medicaid primarily at Community Health Plan, right. And a portion is Medicare, but we've been surprised at how successful we've been with some of our texting campaigns, even for our Medicare population.
That's right.
Just simple stuff. So it's just something we're exploring, taking that to the next level and getting feedback.
And I would say if you enter into agreement with an organization to manage your survey for you, that text is an option. You can absolutely implement that, and they can manage that for you as well. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, at Presbyterian, for many, many years, used the CAHPS overall rating of health plan measure as our scorecard outcome measure. And some years ago, we, piloted NPS and like the Forrester Customer Experience Index and different mm-hmm. measures. Where we kind of landed was, these other measures weren't really going to bring any additional call to action or change our actions. So we weren't going to give up our trending and all this benchmarking. And so just curious if anybody else had a different take on whether one of these measures is better than the other or if it doesn't really matter too much.
Do they correlate?
They correlated. I mean, it was interesting. Some of the measures lagged in like when bad things would happen differently, but in the end, the trending was similar. So.
Yeah, and the CAHPS survey for us, the CAHPS survey in volume compared to what our transactional survey supplies, we get a much better pulse on our customer from a transactional survey. I'm getting 1,000 responses a month, where with CAHPS I might get 1,400 responses a year. So it gives us a different pulse with our customer. It gives us a better chance to react quickly instead of waiting and being a little bit more reactive. So I think there's that benefit is how frequently you can get the data. If you're managing your own or even having another company manage it, you can see it daily. You can see it hourly. So if you want to see a response to what happened in the IVR early this morning when wait times were 7 minutes, you can see that this afternoon potentially. So there's a big benefit to how frequently you get your data and how much you can do with it, I think.
Right.
That's the big seller to me.
I'm talking like relationship surveys specifically. We kind of do transactional ones too.
Okay. Right, yeah, compared to the relationship, right, you're still annual anyway.
I'm talking like just our quarterly measure where we get all the
high level. So for us, what we get from our annual survey that we're doing for a customer experience and relationship is it's really inexpensive, especially if you're having someone call, depends on the size of the sample you're needing. It was really, really inexpensive for us to get through a call campaign. It will be cheaper email or mail. And at the same time, I get a great verbatim from a customer that I can still take action on. And you can create an outlet, especially if you're doing a phone call, where if you have one of these contractors working on your campaign for you and they run into something that needs attention now, you give them an escalation path where they can get it back to someone in your department to handle it and get it resolved immediately. So there's a positive nature to it that gives the customer a sense that you can care, that the organization cares about their interaction and what just happened or what's going on with them right now. So there's certainly benefits to it that are a little bit different than CAHPS.
The CAHPS versus NPS for us, the big determinant was CAHPS, we can only compare ourselves to other health plans.
Yeah.
And Net Promoter Score would tell you that health plans are the third worst industry, right? So how do we compare against really good industries?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a great point. If you get into that data, you get access to all of it. You don't purchase just health insurance industry. You get to see the entire sample. Now they segment it for you, but you get to see it all.
I think that's a really important point, Chris and Brian, because something that we haven't really dwelt on or gone into is that our customers' expectations of us are driven by the everyday experiences that they have with Amazon and everything else that goes on in their lives. So when we're comparing ourselves only to the health industry, that's not going to meet what their expectations are.
Yeah, I thought it was really great, Chris, that you mentioned that your company is comparing themselves to all the other industries, right? That's something we've not done yet, but that was a great idea. Because customers spend money, they vote with their dollars, whether it's health insurance or fast food, they vote with their dollars.
Right. So at lunch today, I just paid a bill online on my phone.
Right.
Right? That's what I want from my healthcare system and health insurance company. We don't provide that experience today, right?
And a lot of us don't feel like we have to. I think that mindset's changing recently. But it'll change the experience for customers in the very near future, I hope, is what we'll see as we become much more of a retail environment.
Just to build on Chris's point, I mean, I think we're the same way at Sharp. We benchmark outside our industry and kind of look to Amazon and Uber, and you look at just like the banking industry and where it was like 10 years ago, people used to be frustrated with the banks. It's like, now I can deposit a check at 3 o'clock in the morning on my phone. So that's where we need to get to.
Yeah, I agree. And that's I really wish, I was mentioning earlier, Satmetrics, with all the surveys they were doing, giving you the verbatims, you could go into see what people said about USAA and why they liked USAA so much. I'm a USAA customer, so I know why I like them. It's because they gave me excellent customer service. As soon as I get on the phone, they know who I am. They know why I'm calling most of the time. They anticipate me. I don't call very often. So they usually know why. But to be able to go into those surveys and see all that data was really, really powerful. I really enjoyed that. And then being able to look at the people that had really, or the organizations that had really negative scores and see what they was said there, that was really enlightening to see the kind of missteps you can take. A lot of times it was the same kind of stuff. It just depended on frequency of those things from what I was reading. So it's how frequently do you displease your customer more than it is how much you displease them.
Questions for Brian. How many of you are using Net Promoter Score? I think I asked that question earlier. And what are you learning from it? How are you using it? How are you integrating it into, you know, your decision and your actions?
Here,
anyone,
Chris,
want to make a quick comment about that? And then we'll wrap it up.
I just have a follow-up question that, Dennis, for people using Net Promoter Score. Today, we're only using it with our members. In the next 6 months, we're going to start using it with our employer groups and our brokers. I'm just curious if anybody's doing that.
Yeah. Health First is.
Really? Yeah. Okay, we're late to the game.
we actually just, so I mentioned, we just started with providers a couple months ago, and we're using it with brokers as well. Brokers give us a slightly higher response rate than providers do, slightly, but not quite as good as customers, for what that's worth.
Okay, Angie Vasquez with Brian from Health First. I just want to add to that the question about what are we doing with it. Was that, Dennis, your question? We have made NPS a divisional goal. So I think Kathy was talking about a competency wheel. We have stewardship, customer experience, quality and no harm. And for that customer experience, a competency, we're using NPS as KPI. We've exceeded our goal for this year, not knowing that we'd be rated so highly or favored so well by our customers. So that is one way that we've utilized the metric.
And I would add to that, one of the things that made us, again, nervous at the end of last year as we were creating our baseline on our transactional survey and then validating it using the relationship survey, was how much can you improve from a 62, right? That's a scary place to be. And setting a goal, because it's also it ties up our merit for our associate level all the way through our management. To pick a goal of improvement off of 62 was a tough decision. So we actually chose to say we were 58, and we'd improve from there, which we did. We've actually improved from our 62, so we're at a 64 now. So it's been really positive. But regardless of where you start from, it's about how much you improve. NPS is it's really attractive to try to set goals on NPS to say I'm going to go from 29 to 35 this year. It's organizations will do that. It's common. It's probably more beneficial to set goals on the things that are going to drive NPS up You use NPS as your benchmark, as your bar, not as the thing that you're measuring to. It's too attractive to avoid often, but if you can find those activities, those sub-measures that really lead to NPS driving upwards, and then measure those things, set those as your goals, achieve those things, and your NPS will follow. It's really about customer experience and not, is my NPS a 60?
One more question, Jane.
When you're doing provider surveying, do you segregate out office staff from physicians? How do you manage those numbers or know who's responding? Or?
No, ma'am, we do not. So it's in the same methodology. We're receiving the customer's response, we receive the provider. So their question, their survey is very short, just to match up. So we want to keep our survey as short as possible. At the same time, being able to have them tell us what type of role they're inside the IVR to track that and trend it and use it as for analytics, we've done that.
Okay, you do analyze.
But we're not distinguishing within NPS based on the type of response we get there.
Okay. I can speak about what Presbyterian does with the relationship provider surveys. It is really important to segment office staff by, clinicians, because we've found not only does satisfaction differ greatly, but the key drivers are hugely different. So you really have to approach those two populations differently.
That's a great question, and I'm glad you're experienced in that, because we've not touched providers yet in our relationship survey. So good to know.
They don't like them.
I bet not.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you all for your contributions and discussions.